Okay, I believe that is 5 o'clock, so I'll go ahead and call this July 25th, 2019 board meeting of the Carson City Library Board of Trustees to order, and we can proceed with the roll call.
Chairperson Hayes.
Present.
Vice Chair Long.
Here.
Commissioner Cranston.
Present.
Trustee Cranston and Trustee Patton.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to item two, public comment. If any members of the public wish to address the Library Board of Trustees, now would be the time. Seeing none forthcoming, we'll move on to item three, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting, starting with the minutes from the June 14th special meeting. Has everybody had an opportunity to review those minutes, and are there any changes necessary? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I don't recall seeing any changes, so I will make a motion that we approve them as presented.
Seconded. I second that.
Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. With that, we'll move on to item 3B, approval of the minutes from the June 27, 2019 regular meeting. Did everybody have an opportunity to review those minutes, and were there any changes? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve.
I move to accept the minutes as presented.
I'll second.
Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. With that, we'll move on to item four, the Friends of the Carson City Library report.
Diane Baker, for the record, the two items were submitted to us from the Friends for your review. If there are any questions, I can forward them to the Friends for further information. I just want to highlight the item that there will be a new manager, actually almost here in days. She's already on board. Is that correct, Phyllis?
She's training at the moment, yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, she'll be on board August 1st.
Thank you for the clarification. Are there any questions to forward to the Friends?
It doesn't appear so. Thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to item 5, Library Board of Trustees business, starting with 5A, discussion of possible action to select a candidate interview pool for the library director position.
Turned it off. Diane Baker, for the record, you have in your packet the hiring or the application information for the candidates that did qualify for review. I do have a spreadsheet to record any voting information that you have, and at this point, discussion by the board.
Thank you very much. Again, I really appreciate the use of Excel. So, do we want to proceed using the same ranking, like first tier, second tier, and third tier?
I've already done that, honestly.
As have I?
Yeah.
As have I. Is that okay? Okay.
Just trying to get them all organized real quick in that order.
Right.
So the list I have before you is alphabetic. It's in the same order that you do have by the last name that you do have in your packets.
Right.
So sorry, just refresh. The three is our top tier or is three our bottom tier?
For additive purposes, three is your top tier.
Okay. I'm ready then.
Are we just going to list these people or are we going to discuss any of these?
Why don't we rank them and then we can discuss after we see, like, if we all, like, have some people who are our bottom tier ones, then we don't discuss them. And if we have a couple that we're kind of indecisive on, we can figure it out.
That makes sense.
So for me, I have Bard's a three, Bush is a two, Well, Colgrave is a 3. Lowe was a 3. I mean, excuse me, 2. Thrash was a 1. Talanian was a 1. Unezi was a 2. Wiggins was a 2. And Zachariah was a 2. Wiggins got a shiny 2 on mine also. Nice and italic.
If you're wondering, I do have a calculation already in there, so it will on that.
You're all ready to go.
Yeah.
So we're putting 3 in each tier, is that correct?
I honestly didn't do that. I put them as I felt. I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I only had 2 top tier and then a bunch in the middle and then 2 at the bottom.
Okay.
For me, Colgrove is a 1. Wiggins is a 1.
That means that's your lowest. You don't
want
to interview.
I'm sorry. That's the highest.
So you want 3
then?
Three.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Highest points.
Right.
So Colgrove
is a 3.
Okay.
Wiggins was a 3.
Okay.
Zachariah was a 3.
Okay.
Tulanian
mm-hmm.
was a 2. Bush mm-hmm. was a 2.
I'm sorry, that one was which one?
Bush.
Bush, thank you.
And Unezi was a 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thrash, Bard, and Lowe were in the bottom tier.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Then I'm prepared with mine.
Okay.
Going in alphabetical order, so top down.
Mm-hmm.
Bard is 3, Bush is 1, Colgrove is 3, Lowe is 1, Thrash is 2, Tulanian is 2, Unezi is 3, Wiggins is 2, Zachariah is 1.
I don't know how I got those.
There's a formatting in the row, not the column, is what it is.
It's got to be. Stop. There.
Are you ready for mine?
I am.
Okay.
I have Bard as a 3. Colgrove as a 3. Wiggins as a 3.
And Tulanian as a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Bush, 2. Unezi, 2. And Thrash and Lowe as 1.
And did I get Zachariah? Did I not hear that one?
That one. Hold on, let me look at that one.
So I'm just going to say, while you're reviewing Zachariah, Colgrave wrote a book for his application. He could put it in his bibliography. I don't know he'll take it. Like, I mean, doesn't he should offer it, obviously, but I feel like he's going to say no.
I don't know what that one was. I don't have him.
No, I know.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
We offer, they decide.
I don't have that one in front of me. I don't remember now. I think I missed that one. I can't remember.
This is the back room.
Okay. Got it. Oh, this was
Yeah, he was a 2. Yeah.
So, Diane Baker, for the record, I've highlighted the top 5 that you have listed, and I did that because in the last round you had, as a board, had thought you would want to see up to 5 individuals for interviews. Any comments, questions, or input with regard? Are you still interested in that number, if a possibility, and then if so, are any of your individuals, like the next 2 listed would be Bush and Tulanian, if you want those as alternates, if individuals opt not to interview?
In my opinion, inviting 5 for the interview is still probably the best course of action. I would agree that having 2 alternates is still a good thing to have.
I agree.
Right. So, did any board members have any discussion regarding interviewing the 5 primary candidates that are highlighted in yellow?
I mean, we all basically seem to be okay with everyone out there, except for we have 2 ones that still make the top 5.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to speak against why we should not interview them, or are we okay interviewing them anyway?
I mean, I think that with the democratic nature of the board, you know, that
it's good to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would
think so. Okay. Then with that information, once you actually, I don't know if you have to move and vote on the list as here, but the next step for me will be to send out invitations tomorrow based on the August 9th date that was already published in the application information, and we will go from there to set up the August 9th, not April, May, August 9th meeting. And
no, wait.
That was the date you first sent us out, right?
That August 9th is a Friday.
I have to go to base that weekend. So I will not be here. Depending on how late the interviews go, I could probably do it, but I have to leave that night by 5.
So the tentative agenda starts at about noon, and then we reconvene at 7 p.m.
That won't work with me.
That would be meet and greet.
No.
No?
So the board convenes at 9:15.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have the 5 interviews. We have a break at 5:30, ostensibly probably for dinner. The meet and greet is 6 to 7, and then the board reconvenes at 7, and we select a candidate.
But just as a clarification, the meet and greet is part of the official meeting, so that will be recorded. But the board doesn't have to react to the public meet and greet, Q&A, how we're doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And we set it this day because that was the day that the room was empty and everything like that, correct?
Right. We could have the room for the whole day. It gave us enough time for, you know, if people were selected that they could still make arrangements for travel without, you know.
So we can shift it to start at like 9 or 10 in the morning?
It can. That
if we can start earlier.
Is that day relatively open?
We have the Sierra room all day.
Okay. So, and this isn't like an action item or an official decision.
No,
the
schedule for the agenda can be set by the chair.
Right. So you and I will get together offline and figure that out.
Okay.
So, as long as I would say 5 o'clock if we're done with everything about then I'll be fine.
Okay. All right.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. Okay. So if there isn't any discussion, you know, regarding changes to the current list, then I would entertain a motion. Just for clarification, we need to name the five and the two alternates, correct?
To be clear, yes, that would be the best course of action.
Right.
So I move to invite the candidates Bard, or the applicants, I should say, Bard, Colgrove, Unezi, Wiggins, and Zachariah to come and enjoy our beautiful Carson City power outages.
Try your button.
Is that, oh, did it go out?
Motion?
No.
No, I can hear you.
Okay. So invite... I'll do it again from the beginning, just in case. So invite Bard, Colgrove, Unezi, Wiggins, and Zachariah to come and interview for the position. And should any of those five decline or not be unable to make it, as alternates, invite Bush or Talani in their place.
I'll second.
Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Let's see. With that, we'll move on to item six, right? Yes, six, the library director reports.
Yeah, Diane Baker for the record. We're getting closer and closer on staffing. We have the library assistant position open, and that's because we were able to promote Jana Wiersma to senior library assistant, and so we're down to that last classified position that closes on August 3rd, next Friday, and so we're this close. A couple of informational items just to update a couple of things that we've worked with continually are the individuals that are dealing with homelessness, behavioral issues, poverty at the library. I had a meeting with the behavioral health peace officer from the sheriff's office and also the most representative, Becca Bach, that works with the sheriff's department. She's a licensed social worker, talking about potential options that we might have and also the potential of having a social worker in the library. Following up that, I did have, just a couple days ago, had a conversation with the outreach and internship individual at UNR, School of Social Work, and looking into options for having a social worker at the library. Very much interested in that. We were talking about different requirements. She's sending me information about participation in their program, but on the face of it, very interested in having the opportunity to place potentially a master's of social work candidate. So I'm going to be pursuing more information on that and what we can do to have that work out. One of the aspects that is that we will need to figure out is who would supervise the intern. They don't have to be resident in the library, but they do need a social worker, a licensed social worker to do that part of their internship. But it looks promising. It looks like they're very interested to support us at the sheriff's office with the MOST team and then at UNR. So I think we have some options to move forward with that. So
I may have some contact information for a few people that you could talk to about the supervisory side of that.
Oh, that's good. I was going to follow up. The person that is on the MOST team, her name's Becca Bach. She is the licensed social worker. She really does work for the state. So if you have some other options, then that would really help that particular piece. Because the city itself does not employ any social workers. I double-checked with the health, health and human services and the like. So we do need to find a different source. Okay. And just the children's shelving status, moving forward on that, getting the finances in place, pretty much have all that package, but now need to work with the new fiscal system to make that and get everything in the right place and get set up for that capital project. But I think we're still on track to be able to do that in the fall. And I do, at this point, I want to mention one thing I placed at your sites there on the ALA member news. This is a policy statement that just came out from the American Library Association about an issue of changing terms of service with a program that we've been using and making available to our clients, lynda.com. A few years ago, it was bought by LinkedIn, and they had continued with the normal terms of service. They had announced just recently, was actually a big item that Amy, yeah. Well, they didn't, but it was, yeah, it was very public at the annual conference once it came out. And so there have been some national webinars. We've been working with them. The reason this is an issue is the way they are changing the terms of service would require anyone who accessed what they're going to call LinkedIn Learning instead of lynda.com, require them to sign up on the LinkedIn social platform. And that would make more of their personal information available. We don't have, at this point, any of our other vendors requiring that. The authentication that we've that has worked and that we used to use with lynda.com would be the library's authentication with a library card. Once the library approved or identified them as a legitimate patron, that was the information that would satisfy and it would keep their private information private. At this point, if it goes this direction, which we're pretty sure LinkedIn is set on, we're trying to figure out if there's a way we can continue when they are potentially harvesting, you know, personal information and then advertising to them based on a subscription. So public money is paying to help them advertise is also another issue wrapped up in it. So I'll keep you posted. Amy has been working a lot on that. She's putting together some information. We have a call with LinkedIn tomorrow. Not sure we're going to hear anything different, but we're trying to follow through on all the contact levels that we can do at this point. We have also posted this information at our At2 Learning Center, so individuals are aware of the issues that are going on with lynda.com. And we'd really hate to lose that resource. It's a really good resource, and individuals that use it really like it. But there are potential issues, and there are a couple of states that already have laws, state laws on the books that would prevent them from pursuing. California is one of them, where personal identifiable information is protected by state law. So libraries in California at this point cannot pursue their subscriptions with lynda.com as it changes into LinkedIn Learning. So I'll keep you posted on that one.
So I think they're already, I mean, I sign in with LinkedIn already.
Yes, we actually knew that, and that's why we're pretty sure they're not going to change. They made this decision and have already rolled in individual and their enterprise clients on that, and then just kind of figured they'd make libraries go along. It was kind of like, oh yeah, we're doing this kind of thing. And for those that have an account, there's a number of issues with it, you know, that could potentially impact individuals, and especially using public money to support, yeah, that kind of data gathering. Okay. A number of the other items here, pretty straightforward, grant status. We're wrapping pretty much in the wrap-up stages there. The one item I have there with the photos, they're kind of dull photos, but we've had a number of suggestions written and a lot in person about wanting more plug-in stations and options because we're in an electronic world. And we, of course, offer Wi-Fi. We have some issues downstairs that we are looking at, but upstairs there were a couple of solutions we could put in right away. So we've added some of these additional plug-ins that include USB connections. Have already gotten a number of very positive comments for adding them, and we're going to look for additional ways we can do that. One of the things we'll be hearing in the future, Ermal is working on researching charging lockers as an option to have something that we could have on the first floor on that. And on the Adams Hub, we did have what I guess we can call a client graduation, Curzon Technologies. They had been at the Hub actually for a while. The business has done exactly what we're looking to do at the Hub, where they have grown. They started growing quite a bit in this last year. And essentially, just before, right around June, they got to the point where they needed to add a number of employees, and it was time to get their own separate location. So they have grown up and gone on to a stable business. So that's one of the thumbs up at the Hub. The website is updated. We're still working on some things with that. And the last item, I'll bring a little bit more information at the next meeting, but the Young African Leaders Initiative, the YALIs, we call them. We had a great program yesterday afternoon at the Hub where there were 25 of the candidates. They are all Mandela Fellows, and representing 22 different countries. And we were part of their month-long program with UNR. Boy, that makes me nervous when the lights blink. But the other fun part of this is we were able to do a catering lunch with Scoops, who actually have been a client not only of the Hub, but the library was also instrumental in getting them up and going as a great source there. So we had an entrepreneurial success story serving lunch at the program as well. It was really a nice event, and Mayor Bob did a wonderful welcome to them as well. Any questions on? All righty. Then I think the next is budget, and a couple of things. I do have the widget for the 2019. We're in the wrap-up stages for the fiscal year 2019 budget. All our revenues are in. There's still expenditures that are wrapping up. The information here, I indicated in the report, we're doing our final reimbursement request to our granting programs. Then we'll be complete on all of the expenditure and revenue from there, and also closing out the gift fund programs. The thing that is going to look a little different for, let's see, let me talk about, I'll put up the Hub P&L next. So we are at the 12-month program. There's still, again, a few expenditures to wrap up. We have a few contract expenses that have not hit for our entrepreneur in residence and our new educator that with the Carson High School. So those are a couple of items that are still to come in, but most everything else is showing here as their expense. We will be rolling forward. The one thing with this, since it's a donation, the funding does roll forward on that. So anything unexpended goes into the next year. This is not like other city funds, since it's a grant, multi-year. Any questions on the Adams Hub P&L? No? The one other item I did not put up would be the budget backup. This is the point where we have quite a bit of information for the closing fiscal year. The fiscal year does not fully close out until August 30th by the city to make sure any of those last expenses are in there. So there's still a few things that will show up here. The budget allocation changes that we had requested may or may not show up here since the city is working on their new platform. At this point, their general thing is if you have enough money in all the categories, we are, you know, we're good. So we will not be overexpending salary for sure in any of the programs, whether it is the library or the Adams Hub, and neither with services and supplies for libraries. So are there any questions as we're wrapping up 2019? I did include two things in your packet, so you have an idea of the types of reports we will be getting out of the new system. So what you're looking at the time we were able to generate the reports, there were no revenues included, so there's not a revenue line yet. They hadn't updated all the revenues in the system, but what you're looking at in the first is for the library, how the reports will look when we do get these out of the new Munis system. Most of the categories are the same. They have mapped our account numbers, so they're kind of recognizable from before. So, you know, it's they did try to make that mapping a little easier for us as we're going to the new platform. We will have the option to make more targeted reports. So these are the first ones, just so you could see how they would generally look. But if these have information in it that we don't ultimately decide not to need, I can produce the report so it's not, you know, any extraneous information is not there. But as we get the data in here, then we'll get a better idea of what we can do. So any thoughts about what we're seeing here? I kind of like, I mean, I think it's going to give us a lot more. Yes, it will be. And I think it will be easier to compare and to see where we are at any one point. The beauty, hopefully, as we go forward, the beauty of this is it'll be closer to real time as opposed to 2-3 week plus lag that at times we would have to wait for things to be uploaded into the system.
Yeah, I think that once it's populated, I think it should be a really powerful tool for us. So,
okay, good. So that is what I have for the budget status. Any questions or thoughts on where we're at? I think we're not reverting any, you know, any huge amounts of money. We tried to keep that number down. The one thing where we had limits, where there is going to be some reversion, is in salary, just because of the vacancies and, you know, working through that part. But that is really the only thing where we couldn't control.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Diane. With that, we'll go on to item 7, our other administrative reports, starting with our creative learning update.
Maria Cuesta, creative learning manager, for the record. So I have a couple things I wanted to talk about today. First off being the Skydome Planetarium. We hosted that the week of July 7th, and we had 2 days where they came and set up the dome for people to go in and learn more information about the galaxy, planets, astronauts, basically a little bit of everything. And it was a really great presentation. We had a total of 133 people attend at Boys and Girls Club. We had 52 kids come in and check it out. And then we were also, the second session was here at the community center. and we had about 81 people attend for the sessions we offered, and we had really positive feedback from the people who came. The second thing I wanted to talk about today is, as most of you probably know, the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing happened. That was July 20th. And so we had some programs to celebrate that. So on July 18th, we had a solar system ambassador come and provide us with a presentation. That was Dr. Steve Metzger. And it went really fantastically. I didn't stay the entire time, but yeah, and I heard that a lot of the patrons had great questions they asked afterwards, and he had a really interactive presentation. People were really excited by it. And then yesterday, we actually went to the Nevada State Museum, where they had their hands-on science day. And that was a fantastic event. We had the WNC Jack C. Davis Observatory, Thomas Herring was there, and he had the solar telescopes up for people to view. There were impact crater opportunities, Seltzer rocket demonstrations, which were kind of scary at times. They went up pretty high, and the kids really liked that, so worked out for everyone, I guess. They had balloon-powered rocket cars. And we, as a library, offered augmented reality experiences with our iPads, so they got to see the moon, Pluto, different planets, asteroids, and inside of a capsule. So it was a really neat experience for them. We had book giveaways and bookmarks and activity kits that we gave away as well. And there were a total of 248 people who came, which was fantastic. So we had groups from Boys and Girls Club, Parks and Rec. Some of the like summer school programs came through. And, yeah, overall it was a real great success. And then inside they also were showing the Apollo 11 documentary, and that was offered through the Carson City Cinema Club. But, yeah, I think it was a fantastic way to celebrate that 50th anniversary. Yeah. And that's all I have for you guys.
Thank you very much, Mary. With that, we'll move on to the collection development update.
Amy Lauder, collection development manager for the record. So it's been pretty busy in collection development land, but not a lot of really cool pictures. It's been more running around and doing a lot of numbers. So in the running around part, I was at Washington, D.C. at the ALA annual conference end of last month, where there were lots of interesting sessions. Of course, some of the topics Diane talked about with social workers is a big trend and something that people are trying to find ways to integrate and do effectively. And there was also a good presentation, which was actually very well attended. I wasn't sure if it would be. It was late on Monday, but we had a really good crowd for our XR Libraries presentation, which I wasn't presenting, but that was Sarah and Tammy and Todd and several of the other people who've been working on that collaborative project and presenting some of the work that I talked about, I think, last month with the cataloging hackathon and some of the other projects that have been going on with that. So there was a lot of interest from people around the country with that project. So that went very well. And also, as we mentioned, one of the most interesting parts was talking to some of my colleagues and what's going on with different vendors, especially in the electronic area, both the situation with LinkedIn, which did kind of catch a lot of people by surprise, that the main issue, they are migrating their content onto the social media platform. It requires a social media account to log in, and that is a major issue for both us and many people around the country. In some places, it's either against the law or against their library's policy. So that's a situation we're trying to, we want to stay on their current platform as long as we can, but it may not be possible with what feedback we're getting from them. So we'll see what can happen with that. Another big talk that's always going on, but there is some more news today with it, is ebooks are a big thing, and restrictions placed by publishers on whether they'll sell to libraries, how they'll sell to libraries, how much it costs to sell to libraries. Today's was, Macmillan. Mm-hmm. Macmillan came out with a plan that it doesn't even make sense. some of them, like, we don't like them, but they at least make a certain kind of logical sense given certain assumptions. This one, I cannot figure where it came from. But their plan starting this fall is to allow sale of one copy of each of their books to each library system for a set price. It would be a perpetual use license. So we would get one copy. Lyon County would get one copy. If you chose to buy it, Churchill would get one copy. Our patrons would have access to three or four. New York Public Library would get one copy. that one person can use at a time. And then 8 weeks later, they would allow sales of metered licenses that would be good typically for 2 years or 52 checkouts, whichever comes first, for twice the price of the other copy. I think, but it's not super clear. I don't think they've thought about consortiums. I don't think they've thought about there are libraries that use more than one ebook platform. The licenses are very expensive. For us as a small library, we usually only buy one license anyway for most things, unless they're very, very, very popular. So it won't affect us very much, but for any even slightly larger library, it's going to have a huge impact. And it just applies so unfairly across the board. And the cost, of course, is continuing to go up. And with the trend is toward the metered access. So once the buzz for a book dies down 2 months later or 4 months later, as they're asking us to wait to buy them until several months later, people don't want them as much. And why would we pay $60 to $100 for a license that is only good for 2 years and might not check out that many times over 2 years in a small library? So they think they're going to make more money off of this way, that more people are going to buy their ebooks directly, which is good for them because they have hardly any overhead for making copies of ebooks. You don't have materials and labor involved in making more copies. So I don't know. A lot of people have a lot of feelings about it. ALA put out a statement this morning. So there were lots of discussions in that, both for ebook and video lending and other models from various, and that basically, this will come to my next section, is a lot of our, with electronic resources in libraries, we want to provide them, but we're often kind of hamstrung with limited options and high cost. And you can see in my lovely charts, I pulled some data. This is the numbers part, kind of pulling the last year's circulation and this year's budget. The categories don't map exactly, but you can see that the biggest chunk of our budget is databases at about 29%. The smallest chunk of circulation is databases at 2.6%. And that is because, in my opinion, not that they have bad content, but they are usually substandard for in-user design. They make it very difficult for people to use and access. But they're very, very expensive. Anyway, other categories are doing better. I did separate out ebooks from databases in this particular example because the opposite is true, that our ebook collection is doing very well, especially over the past year with our collaboration with the co-op in going in together on that collection. So we're spending right now about 9% of our budget on ebooks, and they're making up, I believe it says 13%. So that's doing well. We're getting a really good return on investment there. The best return on investment continues to be in print books. People love print books. So we're only spending, I think I calculate, and this is an estimate, again, some of these categories don't map precisely. Some budgets have multiple material types in them. Lost my calculator. But yeah, my estimate is about 38 to 40% of our budget is spent on print, while circulation is about 53%, 53 almost 54% is print. AV is also doing amazingly, about slightly under 10%. Probably about 10% of our budget is spent on AV, and that includes video and audiobooks. These are physical copies, not the ebook copies. Those are included in the other category. About 10% of our spending, but about 30% of our circulation. So those are doing amazing. But databases are really lagging behind in usability and the use we get out of them for the cost.
What all is in that category of databases?
Yeah, databases. So right now, I can pull up the list, make sure I don't miss anything. The biggest single one is lynda.com. That's a big chunk of it. The next biggest is Rosetta Stone. We have a couple of kind of business-oriented ones. We have Demographics Now, which we just added, which is a great resource for marketing and things like that, as well as Mergent Intellect, another really good business one. Those ones actually have pretty decent design, in my opinion. I think they were designed for private consumers, so that usually not always leads to a little bit higher level of product. Foundation Center, which we are not going to carry anymore after our subscription ends this winter. It's not really getting used. It's available at the state library, and that's for finding grants and other funding organizations. Tutor.com, which is, they do live tutoring. It's fairly expensive, but it's real people providing a service, so that costs X amount per hour. And it does get used pretty much at capacity, so that one does pretty well. We just started having Niche Academy last year, which is, we have tutorials for our makerspace items, we have tutorials for some of these other databases, things like that. That's doing pretty well. And then we have several EBSCO products, including Novelist, which ties into, we have, there's a module that ties into our catalog that gives book recommendations, and that we really like that. Automate, which is online car repair manuals and diagrams and things like that. I feel like I'm missing one. Visitor Demographics.
Would this include something like JSTOR?
We do not have JSTOR. Right. Those are usually, EBSCO is the closest one, but the state pays for that. We don't pay for that out of our budget.
Oh, okay.
And that's the articles and things like that. And so then we have a few add-ons that we pay for out of our budget that are with EBSCO, but yeah, that's Novelist, Automate, Rosetta Stone right now, I think. I think maybe that's it. Yeah. And then, yeah, we have EBSCO, which is all the articles and some magazines, things like that. World Book, Learning Express, which is mostly practice tests and things like that. Through the state database contract. So that's paid for by the state library and provided to all the libraries in the state. So, yeah. Any questions about all of that?
Thanks very much, Amy.
You're welcome.
And with that, we'll move on to the Access Services update.
Irma Reinhart, Access Services Manager for the record. So I also have some statistics for you. These are patron-focused statistics. So we have about 45,000 interactions recorded from 2018 for the 2018-2019 fiscal year. 31,000 of those are at the info desk, and then 14,000 of them are upstairs at the at 2. So basically, every hour we assist about 17 people at any one particular station. I do have a breakdown of the interaction types. The two biggest ones you'll see are Polaris and General Assistance. Polaris being anything that has to do with a patron's account or assisting them using the Polaris ILS. General assistance is a catch-all for other that don't necessarily fit any of the other interaction types listed in the chart above. The next thing I have is digital equipment checkouts. We have circulated 335 of them in the current fiscal year. Collaboration room bookings confirmed 804, and then time slots confirmed 1404. So that difference is basically people requesting multiple slots. So those 804 people requested multiple slots, two at a time. So total used time is 84,000 minutes. VR bookings, we've had 72 bookings total, and that adds up to about 2,200 minutes. And we've had the equipment available to the public for about a year now, since June. New patron accounts. This year, this fiscal year, we've had 3,800 new accounts created. That's up from 3,628 last year, so about a 5% increase. 2,224 were adult, 690 were internet, 563 were youth. So I'd say we had a pretty decent amount of growth in increasing our number of patrons. But something else I would like to point out is that our busiest time of day is the 11 to 12, and then additionally after school from 3 to 4. Also, our busiest days of the week are Wednesdays and Fridays, which I was surprised by Wednesday, but those are our two busiest days. Other than that, are there any questions?
Yep. Thank you very much, Irma. Okay, with that, we'll move on to board member announcements and requests for information. Did any board members have anything that they wanted to bring up at this time?
I already brought it up earlier, but the timing for what we had discussed won't work with me. So
for the August 9th meeting, we've got that. There is, Chair, there's one thing I neglected to add in my report, and that was just the update for the new trustee. That is going to the next Board of Supervisors meeting August 1st, and there were four applications for the position, so they have all been invited to the August 1st meeting. It will be around 9 o'clock is the estimate that I just got today is when they will be interviewing. And then we do have, it was deferred from the July meeting, the NNDA agreement will also be on the August 1st meeting.
Do you know if the person who is selected by the Board of Supervisors on the 1st, if the confirmation process and all that, because I remember I had to be sworn in and everything, will that happen quick enough for them to be involved in the interview process?
I'm not sure that would be, and I know potentially, I mean, if you have four, you are fine on the quorum.
Right.
There would be the question as having that individual come up to speed with the whole process and all the applications, if that's, if that would be the best to have them involved in that.
Right.
So I think the timing would be a little tight.
Mm-hmm. I only ask because looking at the timeline for Trustee Cranston, that he needs to be on the road at 5. We're looking at doing a public meet and greet, and if that has to happen at like 3:30 or 3, you know, we're excluding the working population and things like that. So I know that we want to do this as quickly as we can. But I'm almost wondering if we move it to a different day.
The interviews, you mean?
Yeah. But I think that we informed the candidates that...
It was part of the application process of identifying August 9th.
Okay. So, again, you and I will talk offline. And
And we can involve Megan in if HR has any input regarding a new trustee and the best role.
Right. Okay. All right. I think that was my only request for information. So, okay. Did any other board members have anything? If not, we'll move on to item 9, public comment. If any members of the public wish to address the Library Board of Trustees, now would be the time. Seeing none forthcoming, we'll move on to item 10, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
We are adjourned.
We may have to change the